Why does 60% of the entire population have chronic diseases? Why are we spending $20 billion a year on our health problems? They say that the biggest problem is inflation and the tremendous national debt. Do you realize it wouldn't take very many years to wipe out that national debt if everybody belonged to this organization and followed through on our precepts? Now, how did we get into this terrible condition? I have here in front of me the book that was written by Harvey W. Wiley. Some of you are familiar with it. I found a great many people that have read it and are not familiar with a few of the passages that I'm going to read. Dr. Harvey was a medical doctor, a very high caliber individual, probably as high a caliber a man as we've ever had in any of our government positions. In 1883, he was appointed as chief of the Bureau of Chemistry. For 23 years, he worked to get the Pure Food Law through. In 1906, he got it through. Congress was determined that he was the only one whom they could trust to enforce the law. So even though his enemies tried time and time again and brought all kinds of pressure to bear on Congress, they refused to put the enforcement of that law into anybody's hands but Dr. Wiley. Remember that, because I want to show you how it was taken out of his hands. During all this time, they got committees together, and one of the committees that they got together was the Remsen Committee. Remsen was the man who was getting the money from saccharin. He was getting the rebates out of the saccharin deal. He was put in charge. How much real, true science and truth would you get out of a man who was fighting the man that put the Pure Food Law through? In 1906, the law went through, and for 6 years longer, Dr. Wiley tried to enforce it. But no matter what he did, the government, in every way, from the president right down through everybody except Congress — Congress didn't buck him, but every secretary of the treasury bucked him on every step that he made, including the president. So in 1912, he resigned. And then he wrote a book called The History of a Crime Against the Food Law. He gave the manuscript to the printer, and it disappeared. So then he spent 10 years revising it, revamping it, and bringing it up to date, and republished it again about 1927. I guess it's more than 10 years. It was put into all of the bookstores, but disappeared before anybody could buy it. Then he saw that the power was so tremendous against him that he thought, if he'd have been a man today, you know what he'd have done. He just piled them out there by the hundreds of thousands and made fortunes on it. But he was an honorable man. So he refused to publish any more, but gave the last few thousand to the various libraries all over the country. They disappeared from the libraries, one after another, and until I think a final survey showed that only four of them were left. But the public are under the impression that we are protected. Go out and talk to your friends and your relatives. They think you're crazy and nuts. There's anything wrong with our food. We've got a food law. We're the only country in the world that's got a food law. What I want to show you is that we have no such thing as a food law to protect the consumer. All the food law has ever done is protect the processors, the manufacturers, and the chemical industry, because they never would allow him to fully enforce it. I'm going to read his own words. He says, "I am now convinced that the freedom which belongs to every private American citizen can be used by me more fruitfully in rallying public opinion to the support of the cause of pure food and drugs than could the limited activity left to me in the position which I have just vacated." This is right after when he was vacated. "I propose to devote the remainder of my life, with such ability as I have at my command and with such opportunities as may arise, to the promotion of the principles of civic righteousness and industrial integrity which underlie the Food and Drug Act, in the hope that it may be administered in the interest of the people at large instead of that of a comparatively few mercenary manufacturers and dealers." Dr. Wiley resigned because the fundamental principles of pure food law have been strangled. because he has been powerless to punish the manufacturers and misbranded and adulterated drugs and foods, and because the powers of his position have been nullified by executive order, not by the United States Congress, but by executive order. Now, he goes on to explain certain decisions that, understand this, the Bureau of Chemistry, of which he was the chief, was actually under the Agricultural Department at that time. He goes on to show how the Agricultural Department, and he names the man, James Wilson, Frank McVeigh, Secretary of the Treasury, and Charles Nagel, Secretary of Commerce and Labor, rescinded his decisions, numbers 45, 65, 95, and 98, all rescinded them in favor of the manufacturers. And here's what he says. This decision, directly contrary to the findings of many federal courts, remember, these decisions were federal court decisions that he got through. This decision, directly contrary, promulgated by the three secretaries charged with the duty of making rules and regulations for carrying the law into effect, is the most astonishing exhibition of illegality ever perpetrated. No higher flight of open contempt of judicial findings has ever been made by anyone whose duty it is to follow the court's decisions. It would have been bad enough as an attempt at construing the meaning of a law prior to judicial opinion. In the face of the fact, it is a flagrant contempt of court. In other words, they didn't try to decide before the court decided. They waited till the court decided and then set them aside. What are you going to do when the executive won't obey? All of the interests which were engaged in adulterating and misbranding foods were greatly heartened by this victory of the rectifier. If one class of misbranders and adulterers could receive immunity by executive order, why not apply the same principle to all forms of adulteration and misbranding? The dikes that held the swelling flood of adulterations and misbranding of our beverages were broken down, and the waves of food adulteration swept over and devastated the country. Now, the committee finally decided to establish this Remsen Committee. And they put this Remsen Committee directly under the Department of Agriculture, not under Wiley. In other words, they were coordinated with as much power as Wiley. Now, they listened to this Remsen Committee, who were a bunch of scientists, like the many of them we have today, who are paid by food processors to get certain findings. And they got them. The department heads preferred to listen to these processors rather than listen to Dr. Wiley, who had the dope. He says the committee realized that this was the consummation of the plan of the solicitor. In other words, this committee put the power in the hands of their solicitor, a lawyer, who had the last and final word. No longer the courts had the word. No longer anybody had, except this solicitor and the Secretary of Agriculture. And whatever the solicitor said to the Secretary of Agriculture went. Dr. Wiley no longer had any power, even though he's the only one that had Congress would give the power to enforce. He says the committee realized that this was the consummation of the plan of the solicitor. It totally disregarded the provisions of the food law as to the methods of its execution. It placed the solicitor, not mentioned nor recognized in the law, in the place of the Bureau of Chemistry as the sole arbiter of all processes looking to the enforcement of the act. The result was a wild orgy of adulteration and misbranding paid for by the money of the taxpayers appropriated for the enforcement of the law. The members of the referee board became experts paid by the government to protect the interests of the adulterators and the misbranders. And here we have a law that now is protecting the adulterators and the processors, and not the public in any way, shape, or form. Their efforts in this direction were put into effect by the solicitor of the department. Do you know that Dr. Wiley was so far seeing that he developed the finest and the most elaborate in the world method of studying soils? He had the chemistry of soils under his own department. He brought soils from every part of the Union. He gave them all exactly the same moisture, the same temperature, and so forth to see what the difference was in the soil. He brought soils from Rothamsted, I think that's the name to call it, in England, where, he said, they had raised wheat on one piece of land every year for 100 years, and the soil was still verdant and still a wonderful soil, and all it ever had was manure. Well, here's what they did. Typical soils were added to this collection. Samples of the celebrated field of Rothamsted, England, which had been cultivated in wheat for nearly 100 years without receiving any artificial fertilizer. They had artificial fertilizer coming up then. Whatever. In the midst of these investigations, a new Bureau of Soils was created in the Department of Agriculture, entirely distinct from the Bureau of Chemistry. At the demand of this new Bureau of Soil, all activities of the Bureau of Chemistry and the progress of its investigation were ordered discontinued, and the expensive equipment was abandoned and destroyed. The President called in the Secretary of Agriculture and the Chief of the Bureau of Chemistry, which was Dr. Wiley. They all sit down here. And the men from the tomato industry came forward and said they didn't, that if they stopped the benzoate of soda, it would wreck this huge industry out in Indiana. Mr. Roosevelt turned and asked the Secretary of Agriculture what he had to say. Secretary of Agriculture said, "I'd rather leave that up to the Chief of the Bureau of Chemistry." Actually, he didn't want the Bureau of Chemistry in there, but he had it and he couldn't do anything about it. So he asked Dr. Wiley to tell, and Dr. Wiley showed that it was poisonous and therefore in violation of the law. Mr. Roosevelt, he says, "If it's poisonous, it goes then. That's it." And he got up. Everybody's supposed to get up and leave, but before they got to the door, the man who was interested in the saccharin, "But Mr. President, we had something else here to discuss. The question of saccharin." Everybody sat down again. And before he brought the saccharin very far, Dr. Wiley admitted he made a mistake. He should have waited to be asked to talk. But he butted right in and went to tell all about saccharin. Roosevelt said, "You mean to tell me that saccharin is poisonous?" And Dr. Wiley assured him that it was in a nice way. "Why," he says, "my doctor's been giving me saccharin here so many tablets a day for so many days." "Why, anybody that says that saccharin is poisonous is an idiot, period." And he jumped up and that was it. Wiley was designated by the President of the United States as an idiot, and saccharin was permitted to go, and that was the beginning of the end. Now, the purpose of food law didn't make any difference how much you had in there, what you had, or how many, or anything about. Was it poisonous? Was it of a quality? Was it a substance that was poisonous to the human body in any quantity? But it was barred. Now, they changed it around and said, "You can go ahead and put all the poisons you want in there, but you got to put it on the label." The purpose of the law as a health protector is of no importance whatsoever. The cruelty of this punishment and its wickedness is indicated by the fact that it was legislation grafted on an appropriation bill, the consideration of which was limited to a few hours' debate with no hearings having been given or called on the proposed measure, and no opportunity given to anyone opposing it to be heard. If the Bureau of Chemistry had been permitted to enforce the law as it was written, and as it tried to do, what would have been the conditions today? Get this. Today, this is what we would have had. No product in their country would have any trace of benzoic acid, sulfurous acid, or sulfites, or any alum or saccharin, save for medical purposes. No soft drink would contain any caffeine or theobromine. No bleached flour would enter interstate commerce. Our foods and drugs would be wholly without any form of adulteration or misbranding. The health of our people would be vastly improved and their life greatly extended. The manufacturers of our food supply, and especially the millers, would devote their energies to improving the public health and promoting happiness in every home by the production of whole ground, unbolted cereals, flours, and meals. The resistance of our people to infectious disease would be greatly increased by a vastly improved and more wholesome diet. Our example would be followed by the civilized world and thus bring to the whole universe the benefits which our own people had received. We would have been spared the... Now get this one. We would have been spared the ignominy of disgrace of great scientific men bending their efforts to defeat the purposes of one of the greatest laws ever enacted for the protection of the public welfare. Eminent officials of our government would have escaped the indignation of outraged public opinion because they permitted and encouraged these frauds on the public. The cause of a wholesome diet would not have been put back for 50 or 100 years, and last but not least, this history of a crime would never have been written. You're the only audience in this country that knows the truth and how it happened, how murder was committed. And since then, more devastation, more murders have been committed because of the negation of the law than has ever been committed and published with punished with a crime. An ordinary meal which your wife goes home and prepares you for dinner at night. A meal that has fruit juice, roast beef, gravy, sweet potatoes, peas, tossed salad, bread with rolls, butter, pickles, and apple pie with ice cream. That little simple meal that your wife so diligently prepares and thinks she's given you for your health contains 140 some chemicals. And the Food and Drug admits that only one-third of them might be non-poisonous. One-third are not poisonous in the dosage, that in the tolerance levels they give. But the other third is in no man's land. They don't know what it's like. You might say, well, how, newer people, that's the reason I asked how many of you knew, how can they possibly need all these chemicals? What do they use them for? Well, just let me show you what they use them for. They use them to dye, to bleach, to emulsify, as antioxidants, as preservatives, as flavors, as buffers, as alkalizers, as acidifiers, as deodorants, as moisteners, drying agents, gassers, extenders. Oh, that's one of the best things. That's the finest thing they've ever done, is learn how to extend a thing. Just use water and extend it bigger and bigger. Disinfectants, neutralizers, sweeteners, anti-caking, anti-foaming, cures, hydrolyzers, hydrogenators, fortifiers, and so on and so forth. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, they're interested only in making money and anything to make the thing more beautiful and to preserve it so it won't spoil. Now, I used to love cottage cheese. Before I would lecture, I didn't want a big meal, so I'd always take a little cottage cheese. Well, it's easy to digest, a little fruit salad with it, and it's a nice, nice meal. Can't do that anymore. Why? Because cottage cheese isn't cottage cheese any longer. It used to have a strong flavor of butter. They don't have any butter in it now. What do they use? Diacel. Diacel is a yellowish, greenish chemical that gives a deceptive over aroma of the butter. It's used to swell the volume. So now they can swell the volume by using water and then make it have the same flavor by just putting a little diacel in it. It tastes like butter. So leave it alone. Go hungry, you're better off. But the industry has done a marriage of convenience in which the various kinds of things they're using in various kinds of chemicals, they find that they would go good in food. They have the odors and the flavors like the food. Here are a few of them. If you want this nice vanilla flavor. Now, I used to like ice cream. Vanilla ice cream, can't eat it anymore. Why? It was nothing in it to eat, nothing but air and so forth, and it's flavored not with the good old vanilla bean that we always used to use, which is expensive, but they now use piperonal. It's an inexpensive substitute for costly vanilla, and it's used for killing lice. Now we have it in our ice cream. This don't ever go into a supermarket and buy this cheese that they call processed cheese. Oh, it isn't cheese. It's nothing but a combination of chemicals. Here are some of them. For example, they have to have something to thicken it. So they use methylcellulose, an artificial thickener. And it was formerly used and still used to make cosmetics and adhesives. Now, if you want to stabilize it, which they all want to do so it won't spoil, they use sodium carboxymethyl, which is used in resins, emulsions, paint, and printing inks. Now, if you want to have that pineapple flavor, you wouldn't think of nowadays, scientists, a man who's in business, wouldn't think of going buying pineapples to flavor anything with. No, they use ethyl acetate. It's a solvent used in plastics and liquors. The vapor is irritating to the mucous membrane. Prolonged exposure can cause pulmonary, liver, and heart damage. Maybe I can get you mad enough to fight. The food technician, in other words, the food technician today is no longer interested in prolonging anything but the shelf life of the product. When the life process of the food is destroyed, he must mask the damage, give an appearance of vitality where there is none, restore the missing flavors and odors, improve the color, and give flavor to tasteless, lifeless products. In other words, we don't buy anything by taste anymore. We don't have any taste buds left. All we buy is by texture. You can't tell when you're eating anything anymore what it is by the flavor. You can only tell by the texture. Well, that'll give you some idea of what our foods are like today.